You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Some parts are graphic in nature, and listener discretion is advised. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. It was a mild summer's night in London on the 28th of July, 1954. John Young's dog was restless and needed to go outside. John opened the back door so his dog could have a run in the backyard of the Hempstead home. It was late, and John didn't expect his neighbors to be awake. He was surprised when he noticed the flames in Stavros's and Hella's backyard. It was close to midnight, and a concerned John rushed to the fence to see what was going on. He peeped over and saw the arm of a tailor's dummy in the fire, and assumed they were burning household junk. Hella worked in a fashion boutique, so it wouldn't be odd for her to have a mannequin at home. As John turned to go back into his house, he saw a lady coming out of the neighbor's house, walking towards the fire. He recognized her to be Stavros's mom, who was visiting from Cyprus. The lady stoked the fire with a steady hand, minding it attentively, and to John, it looked like she had the situation under control. By this time, John's wife, Thomasina, was also awake and had noticed the fire. John told her what he saw, and they both went back to bed. The next morning, John went out and walked past the house again. This time, there was a humdrum of police officers and other neighbors mulling in the front. When he heard that someone had died, he realized what he had witnessed. This is a story of the pride, jealousy, and hatred of one cold-hearted woman who would stop at nothing to get her own way. Stelu Pantopio Christofi was born in the rural north of Cyprus in 1900. She grew up in a village of farmers, Nerizo Karpasu, and was barely literate. She moved to the coastal town of Famagusta and married a local man. They didn't have a lot of money. In fact, her husband's family was one of the poorest families in the village. Their only source of income was from a small olive grove that had been in the family for many years. Education was not a priority in rural villages, and Stelu never learned to read or write. It was a harsh environment where violence was considered the best way of handling disputes. Stelu was a headstrong and stubborn woman, who imposed her point of view onto others. If people didn't agree with her, she let them have it. The young couple lived with her husband's mother and had a son they called Stavros. The two women of the house did not get along. In rural Cyprus, there was a strong matriarchal culture. Grandmothers were seen as the ultimate authority, but Stelu refused to take a back seat to her mother-in-law. By all reports, her mother-in-law would also not back down. There was a constant power struggle between the women, and everyone knew they hated each other. When he reached his teens, Stavros did not want to live his life out in a small village. He moved to the city of Nicosia, where he worked as a waiter. Even though World War II was raging through Europe, many young Cypriots migrated to London in the late 1930s and early 1940s. They were familiar with the culture and customs, seeing as Cyprus was a British protectorate at the time. Stavros yearned to get away and diligently saved money from his waiter job so he could go to the UK too. In 1941, he was able to make his way to the city lights of London. Many Cypriot expats worked and lived in West End and Camden in the textile industry, or as manual laborers. It didn't take Stavros long to find work in a restaurant. The handsome young man with the olive complexion and warm smile was able to land a job in London's top-end eateries. During this time, Stavros met the beautiful Hella Bleicher, a German model. She managed to leave Germany before the war broke out and felt lucky to have a shot at a somewhat normal life in England. Stavros and Hella fell in love, and the handsome couple had the world at their feet. They got married in 1942 and had three children together. In 1953, The Christofis family occupied two stories of a large home at 11 South Hill Park, Hampstead. Stavros was working as a wine sommelier at the Café de Paris in London's West End, where he regaled celebrities. Café de Paris is the very same spot where Marlene Dietrich made her concert debut in 1954. Wealthy patrons of London's West End theater scene also frequented the iconic restaurant. Hella worked in a boutique on St. George's Street called Fashion Ways and always took pride in her appearance. Stavros and Hella were happy and had a good balance in their family life. They each had time with the kids, time at work, and time together. They went for family walks on Hampstead Heath, where all the kids learned to ride their bicycles. Theirs was a harmonious, happy home with loving parents. Back in Cyprus, Stavros' mom, Stilou, decided it was time to be a part of her son's life again. She was ready to forgive Stavros. In her eyes, he had insulted her by marrying Hella. Firstly, Hella was foreign. Secondly, she was not religious. And last but not least, they did not seek her blessing before they got married. Stilou had never met Stavros' and Hella's children before. At the time, Nicholas was 11 years old, Peter 10, and Stella 9. Like many of her fellow Cypriots, Stilou saw an opportunity to work in England, save money, and then return to Cyprus to buy a plot of land. Stilou left her island home for the first time in her life and traveled to London, ready for a new beginning, living in her son's home with his family. At the time, London and rural Cyprus could not have been more different from each other, and the illiterate grandmother was in for a culture shock. From the get-go, the situation was strained. Stavros had not seen his mother in 12 years, and she reverted to treating him like a boy. She made no secret of the fact that she did not like her son's wife of more than 10 years. She disapproved of their lifestyle and their parenting decisions, which were vastly different to life as she knew it in a small Mediterranean village. She was also disappointed to find that Stavros had changed his name from Christofi to Christofis. Stavros and Hella's children were born and raised in England to their Cypriot father and German mother. They spoke English at home, went to English schools, had English friends. The family assimilated well in their parents' adoptive country. Stilou resented Stavros for raising his children in another culture. She wanted them to be brought up according to the Cypriot traditions, and at the very least, speak Greek as their home language. The language barrier brought a lot of frustration, and Stilou blamed Stavros for casting aside his roots. Hella could not do much right according to her mother-in-law either. Her housekeeping, child-rearing, and cooking skills were constantly under fire. The fact that Stavros had no intention of ever returning to Cyprus infuriated his mother. She blamed Hella for this decision. In Stilou's opinion, all immigrants should eventually return to their country of origin. This difficult grandmother was outspoken about her feelings, and when her message got lost in translation, she would throw an A-class tantrum. The house at South Hill Park was no longer a happy home. Stilou had been there for an entire year, causing nothing but tension and trouble. Hella had become depressed and sought any excuse to take the children outside, anywhere but home. Her friends and neighbors all noticed the effect her fault-finding mother-in-law had on her. On three separate occasions, Stilou had moved out for a while, but she always came back. In July, she had been staying with them continuously for 4 months. The situation was toxic. It was obviously not working out. Stavros and Hella felt that his mother had overstayed her welcome and planned to ask her to leave for good, perhaps call it a day and move back to Cyprus. They knew the stubborn and unaccommodating Stilou would not like their request, so it was decided that Hella would take the children to Germany to visit her family. They intended to leave on the 12th of August. Stavros would spend some time alone with his mother and then politely broach the topic of her departure. However, Stilou learned about this plan and decided that she wasn't going anywhere. In her mind, the only solution was to get rid of the other woman in her son's life, his wife Hella. If Hella were out of the picture, Stilou could raise her grandchildren in whichever way she wanted to. And she would also have Stavros all to herself. On the evening of July 28, 1954, Stavros had left for work at 8 p.m. to start a shift at Café de Paris. A former neighbor, Robert Cooper, who used to live upstairs from the Christofis, came around 9:35 p.m. After he moved out, he had visited a couple of times. On this night, he only stayed for about 5 minutes. He didn't see Stilou, and Hella was alive and well when he left. And once Robert was gone, the 36-year-old Hella put the children to sleep and went about the house tidying up and getting ready for bed herself. At 1 a.m., Stilou woke up and saw that the entire garden was engulfed in flames. With urgent concern for her grandchildren's well-being, she ran into the road and tried to get help. It was the middle of the night, and not many people were around. Stilou flagged down a couple driving near Hampstead Station. She hardly spoke any English, but managed to get the message across. She shouted, "Please come! Fire burning, children sleeping!" The couple, restaurateurs Henry and Fanny Burstoff, followed the anxious grandmother into the home. They were a bit confused when they walked into the hallway, seeing as though there was no fire inside the house. The woman told them to be quiet because the babies were sleeping. So at least the children were safe. But what was the problem then? The woman rushed off into another room, and Fanny noticed someone lying in the garden. It was obvious that the person was no longer alive, as there was a lot of blood around the head, and the body was badly burnt. Harry Burstoff used the Christofis' phone to call the police, who arrived shortly after. While they were waiting, the Burstoffs tried to make sense of the scene. They asked Stilou if the body outside was her son. She replied, "No, my son married German girl he like. Plenty clothes, plenty shoes. Baby's going to Germany." Sergeant Maurice Stevens found Hella's body in the backyard and immediately suspected that something sinister had taken place. He attempted to get more information from the woman who had raised the alarm, but she kept saying, "I no speak, I no understand." A second police officer arrived at the scene within the hour at 1:45 a.m. The officers figured out that there were three children sleeping upstairs and that their mother had been killed. They managed to communicate to the grandmother that she should go upstairs and sit with the children while they processed the scene. Investigators found the badly burnt body of Hella Christofis in the backyard of her home. She was naked, except for a pair of shorts, and the doctor who attended the scene mentioned a strong smell of paraffin. There was also quite a bit of water, showing that someone tried to put out the fire. However, neither the doctor nor the pathologist believed that the fire had caused the victim's death. Around her neck were strangulation marks, and she had suffered a big blow to the head. Her hair was drenched in blood. She had been struck with a heavy, round, but linear object. She had also suffered a broken nose. Police called Stavros at work and requested he come home immediately. Stavros arrived at 3:30 a.m. and learned that his wife had died. Only a couple of hours before, everything was fine, but in the small hours of the morning, his life was in ruins. Hella was gone, and his mother was trying to explain what had happened. Life as he knew it would never be the same again. Investigators commanded Stavros, who was in shock, to act as an interpreter between them and his mother. One can only imagine the hell he must have gone through. He came home to find his wife murdered, and his mother was the prime suspect. He asked the questions, then told police officers what her replies were. They wrote them down, and Stilou, who could not read or write, made a mark on the statement as a signature. Inside the home, they found evidence of the violent event that preceded the fire. On the kitchen floor was a half-cleaned-up bloodstain. Rags and newspaper soaked in paraffin attested to the fact that the backyard fire was intentionally lit. Pieces of the scarf used to strangle Hella were recovered from the trash. In order to remove the noose around Hella's neck, it was cut into smaller pieces. Later the same day, the pathologist informed investigators that there were no carbon particles in the victim's lungs, proving that she was already dead when the fire was lit. Stavros pointed out that the French doors leading to the garden could not lock properly. Hella had come up with a plan to jam a garden fork beneath the handle so no one could open it from the outside. She was security conscious, as Stavros worked nights and she wanted to keep the children safe. When police arrived at the scene, this makeshift lock was found inside the house next to the door on the floor. They found Hella's wedding ring in Stilu's bedroom, wrapped in newspaper and hidden behind a vase. Stilu could not explain why the ring was there. She claimed that she found it on the stairs, thought it was a curtain ring. However, no curtains in the house had curtain rings, only hooks. Stilu pretended to be confused and explained in her broken English that she had been asleep upstairs when the smell of smoke woke her up. According to Stilu, she ran downstairs and saw Hella lying in the back garden. Hella burning, throw water, touch her face, not move, run out, get help. According to Stilu, she saw two assailants leaving the house. One was carrying a suitcase. The front door was open, and the men ran away when they saw Stilu. When the Christofis' neighbor John Young saw the commotion at number 11, he approached police to tell them what he saw the night before. He said that he saw Stilu standing by the fire sometime between 11:30 and 11:45. He would never have thought that she was actually trying to cremate the mother of her grandchildren. She was not in a hasty panic, but was calmly executing a sinister plan. In contradiction of this, another witness, Isabella Bold, came forward and claimed she heard two male voices shouting in the backyard around midnight. That was closer to Stilu's version of events. But none of the other neighbors could corroborate this testimony. In all likelihood, Ms. Bold heard the other neighbor, John Young, talking to his wife, reporting to her what he had seen. If one stops to consider Stilu's story for a minute, the obvious question to ask is, who would have wanted to kill Hella? If the story of the two men were true, what motive would they have had for murdering a mother of three who worked at a fashion boutique? Her boss, Eric Porter, said that she had worked for him since July 1953. Hella was a great asset to the business. She was always smiling and happy, and it was obvious that she loved her husband and their children. Stilu Christofi was taken into custody and charged with the murder of her daughter-in-law. At a preliminary hearing, Stavros testified that his mother and his wife did not get along. He claimed that Hella had suggested to Stilu that she went back to Cyprus, and Stilu said that if that is how Hella felt, she would leave. In court, when asked about his wife's ring, Stavros had to admit that Hella's wedding ring of more than 10 years fit tightly on her finger and would not have slipped off by accident. Chief Medical Officer at Holloway Prison, Dr. Thomas Christie, noted that she was deranged and hysterical. And sometimes she sat on the bed in her cell screaming all night. Yet the doctor deemed her fit to stand trial. Dr. Christie found that Stilu Christofi was suffering from delusional disorder. He described her diagnosis as such. The clinical picture, then, is that of a non-systematized delusional mental disorder. This is a recognized disease of the mind. The fear that her grandchildren would not be brought up properly induced a defect of reason due to the above disease of the mind, whereby however much she may have been capable of appreciating the nature and quality of the acts she was doing, at the time of the acts, the defect of reason was such that she was incapable of knowing that what she was doing was wrong. In my opinion, Stilu Pontopio Christofi is insane, but is medically fit to plead and to stand trial. Stilu felt that Hella was taking her grandchildren to Germany to get them away from Stavros and also away from her. In her mind, she was saving her son and his children. She also told Dr. Christie about another son of hers in Cyprus. According to all other sources, Stavros was Stilu's only son. So whether this was true, or if something got lost in translation, or if the story was constructed to gain sympathy, we'll never know. Either way, Stilu complained that her other son in Cyprus had married a promiscuous woman who was not a good mother. According to Stilu, she offered to help, but was asked to leave. It pained her, as she felt she was abandoning her grandchildren, leaving them with no moral protection. This situation played itself out once more when she arrived in London. Using crime scene evidence, the prosecution was able to prove what happened to Hella that night. She was in the kitchen, washing herself in the basin when Stilu approached her from behind. Stilu, armed with a cast iron ash plate from the stove, proceeded to hit Hella over the head. Hella dropped to the floor, unconscious. The hate-fueled mother-in-law grabbed her grandson's scarf from the kitchen table and strangled her daughter-in-law. Making sure Hella was no longer alive, Stilu plucked her wedding ring off her finger and kept it aside. She undressed Hella and placed her blood-soaked clothes in the washing pail. Then, the calculating Stilu dragged Hella's lifeless body out to the back garden where she covered her in paraffin-soaked newspaper and set her alight. Stilu's shoes were drenched with paraffin, proving that she was standing next to the body while dousing it with accelerant and lighting the fire. More damning, her bracelet, ring, and shoes had Hella's blood on them. The first officers at the scene also noted that contrary to her story that she was in bed when she noticed the fire, the bed was made and had not been slept in. Crown Prosecutor Christmas Humphrey stated, "So, this is a murderess who was remarkably tidy in clearing away the evidence of the murder." Stilu's defense encouraged her to plead insanity, seeing as she had been diagnosed with delusional disorder. But she refused to plead insane in a court of law, even if it meant she would avoid facing a death sentence. The problem was that a lot was lost in translation. After she was formally charged, she was appointed an official interpreter, and Stavros didn't have to do it anymore. Her interpreter spoke Greek, yes, but her rural Cypriot dialect made communication, especially with the finer details of the case, problematic. A second interpreter who was more familiar with the dialect was brought in to assist as well. To get the point across, the interpreters told Stilu she had to say she was crazy. Coming from a small town, that is the last thing anyone would ever admit to. She said, "I am a poor woman, of no education, but I'm not a mad woman. Never, never, never." Whether she ever wholly understood her diagnosis is unclear. Her trial kicked off at the end of October 1954 at the Old Bailey in London. Crown Prosecutor Humphreys was quick with derogatory statements about Stilu, highlighting the fact that she came from a vastly different world to that of inner-city London. He mocked her intellectual ability and, at times, was blatantly xenophobic. This was his description of her. A stupid woman of peasant type, who really believed that after washing a floor she could eliminate bloodstains, and that with a small tin of paraffin she could burn a body that it could not be recognized. Stilu stuck to her story that she was asleep when two assailants broke into the house and killed Hella. She was presented with the facts. There were no signs of forced entry. In fact, the garden fork used to secure the French doors was found inside. No one could have opened the doors from the outside. Prosecution also informed her that John Young saw her stoking the fire and asked what she had to say about that. Through her interpreter, Stilu replied, "From this story, I know nothing more." Crown Prosecution laid her motive. She was jealous of Hella's youth and appearance. Bear in mind, Stilu was only 16 years older than her daughter-in-law, yet she appeared to be much older. In Stilu's own words, she said that she was not wanted and was being sent back home to Cyprus. After deliberating for only 2 hours, the jury found Stilu guilty of the murder of her daughter-in-law. And on the 28th of October, Stilu Christofi was sentenced to death by hanging. There was a feeble attempt to appeal Stilu's death sentence. Several labor MPs argued that if she was deemed to be insane, how could she be expected to choose her plea? The question arose, would an insane person understand the benefit of pleading insanity? One MP said, "The mere fact she did not claim insanity shows she is not of sound mind." They felt that she should be sent to a mental institution rather than the gallows. However, the court appointed 3 independent psychologists to assess Stilu, and all of them found her to be completely sane. They agreed that justice was served and an execution date was set. On the day of her execution, she requested that a Greek Orthodox cross was placed on the wall of the execution chamber, and prison authorities complied. The cross remained there until the room was demolished in 1967. When Holloway Prison was refurbished in 1971, Stilu's remains were exhumed. Along with the remains of fellow executees Ruth Ellis, Edith Thompson, Amelia Shaw, and Annie Walters, Stilu was buried in a mass grave in Brookwood. It was unmarked until 1993, when a plaque with the names of the 5 women was placed on the grave. Stilu Christofi's life was ended on the 15th of December, 1954, by the prolific executioner Albert Pierrepoint. A report of her execution noted that she was calm when she walked herself to the scaffold, accepting her fate. At the age of 54, she was the oldest woman to be executed in England in the 20th century. She was buried in the unmarked grave at Holloway Prison. Albert Pierrepoint wrote of Stilu in his autobiography. He recalled all the media attention garnered by the Ruth Ellis case, the last woman to be executed in England only 5 months after Stilu. As an interesting side note, the two women only lived a short distance from each other in Hampstead. Pierrepoint compared the two cases. A blonde nightclub hostess was much more alluring than a gray-haired and bewildered grandmother who spoke no English. No one put up much of a fight to spare Stilo Christofi's life. Her own son Stavros only went to see his mother in prison once, and afterwards broke off all contact with her. He said, "I cannot find it in my heart to forgive my mother. The word mother has become a mockery to me." Stilo did not take any responsibility for her actions, nor did she consider the grief she had caused her son and her grandchildren. She blamed Stavros for her predicament because he testified against her. From her prison cell, she dictated many letters to Stavros, like this one. "I hope that you are all right as well as your children. I hope that you will always be with God's help. It doesn't alter what's going to happen to me. You have tried too hard to hang me, to put around my neck the noose so that you may rest. I am not obliging you to come and see me, my son. For my fortune, there is my family in the streets in Cyprus crying for me. If you saw their letters, you would be moved and cry as we do. My brothers say that if the sea were earth, they would come on foot to see me. Kiss the children for me." Stavros did not buy into the guilt trip and refused to reply to any of her letters. He eventually remarried and started a family with a second wife. He tried to rebuild his life. But the events of that July night in 1954 left a scar that would never heal. His son, from the second marriage, Toby, appeared in an episode of BBC's Murder Mystery in My Family. He always wondered if justice was served and if his grandmother was indeed the killer. If she was, did she receive a fair trial? He was concerned that prejudice played a role. She was an uneducated foreigner accused of a brutal murder. Newspaper pieces at the time were not very forgiving of Stilu. One headline read, "Stupid murder by a stupid woman." Another article calls her an illiterate Greek peasant woman who despised the fact that her son gave most of his attention to his wife. Stilu Christofi was dubbed the mother-in-law from hell. Be that as it may, in revisiting the case, it became evident that the judge did take Stilu's situation into account. She was given more than one interpreter and received a fair trial. In the end, it was the evidence at the Christofi's home that incriminated her more than anything else. A story from Stilu's past never heard at court surfaced that proved she was indeed capable of murder. Toby Christofi visited his grandmother's homeland of Cyprus and met with a local barrister and crime author, Stefanos Evangelidi. He learned that Stilu had been in trouble with the law before. On the 29th of September, 1924, Stilu was one of a group of women who confronted and assaulted her own mother-in-law. They barged into the victim's house and hit her with anything they could find lying around. Stilu took things to the next level when she picked up a burning wooden torch. The other women held the victim down while Stilu rammed a flaming torch down her mother-in-law's throat, killing her in the most violent way thinkable. Stilu did not serve time for this crime, however. The women were known to bicker, and the perception was that the victim drove Stilu to commit this desperate act. After years of emotional abuse, she snapped, and she was not judged for her brutal retaliation. Historian and crime author Philip Jones said that insular small Cypriot towns like the one Stilu hailed from had their own ways of dealing with conflict. If a disagreement turned violent, no one batted an eye. It was the way it was, nothing more to it. Stefanos Evangelidi theorized that there was more to the story. He delved deeper into the history of the Christofi's family and discovered another chilling incident. Stilu's mother-in-law, Maria Christofi, and her lover had murdered her husband back in 1911. The family decided to punish her for disgracing them and acted with Stilu, her sister-in-law, and a neighbor stepping in to execute vigilante justice. Stilu's mother-in-law had harmed the family's name, and she had to be punished. A study conducted by the magazine FemPower gives some context to the situation, this quoted directly. Honor is a complex and important term in the Cypriot culture. Reputation and a good standing in the community are of fundamental importance. Honor is the excuse for much of the violence in Cypriot society, although it is not named as such, particularly within the family. Honor is invoked in the case of socially unacceptable behavior. Murdering one's husband with the help of your lover certainly classified as socially unacceptable behavior, and this is probably why Stilu was acquitted of killing her mother-in-law. In Cyprus, Stilu is known as the Cypriot Phonisa, meaning the Cypriot killer. This name stems from a novel by Alexandros Papadiamantis, where the main character is a widow who had lived a tortured life full of misery. She believed the birth of girls brought nothing but hardship and even killed her own newborn granddaughter. The book is every bit the Greek tragedy that Stilo Christofi's life turned out to be. After the trial in Famagusta, Stilo's husband left her, and she had to raise Stavros all by herself. As soon as Stavros could go, he did so too. Living with Stavros and Hella, she envied their closeness as a married couple. She disapproved of their lifestyle and appreciation of the finer things in life. She may have been a victim of xenophobia during her trial, but she held the same attitude towards Hella, who was always a foreigner to her. When Hella planned on taking the grandchildren away, even just for a holiday, Stilu decided to take action, eliminating her problem in the most wicked of ways. If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also, visit and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/evidencelockerpodcast to see more about today's case. If you like our podcast, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening right now. This was The Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.